I am going to reconvene our Tuesday's meeting because I recessed with the call of the chair. So I'm reconvening that meeting, and now I'm adjourning that meeting.
Huh.
Okay? Now. Okay? This is Thursday, April 28th, 2:05, and 2005, and it is about 7 minutes after 3, and I'm calling this House Hess Committee to order, and let the record reflect that Representative Coring, Representative Gardner, Representative Cisna, and myself, Wilson, are present. And today, we do have with us, and I'm real pleased that we have this wonderful group with us, that it's the Family Wellness Warrior Initiative, and this group has a story to tell and how they're making a difference in their area and actually in areas across the state, right?
Statewide.
So that's kind of exciting. So this has to do with all kinds of things, whether it's alcohol abuse or drug abuse or child abuse or whatever. You have found ways to deal with it yourselves and to find ways because of what you've been through to help others. So I think that's really exciting. So I'm just going to let Catherine Gottlieb. Gottlieb. You're the president and CEO of South Central Foundation, and I will just let you explain a little bit more of what you're doing and turn it over to you, and you can introduce the other folks with you. So I'll just let you start in.
Well, thank you, first of all, for the invitation to come and present to you about Family Wellness Warriors Initiative. I know that you heard our presentation before, Madam Chair, and I just appreciate your invitation to present before this committee. And I understand you're very busy, and I will try to make our presentation very tight and understandable to you. And so we'll each take about 5 minutes or so to speak to you, and then leave the rest of the time for allocated for questions or comments or whatever it is that you would like to address with us.
You know, we actually have about 50 minutes. So,
okay.
You know, if you need to take a little more time with each of yours, that would be fine, because
okay.
I think that was the part. I think that is good for us to hear how you have personally gone through what you've gone through, and then how you've used that to help others.
Okay. So, my name is Catherine Gottlieb. I'm a Lutik and Filipino, and I was born in Old Harbor. It's a little small village on Kodiak Island. I was raised in Saldovia, and I spent some of my time growing up in Seattle. And now I'm the president and CEO of South Central Foundation. It's a $110 million organization, runs a primary care center and other community activities. Other community activities around Anchorage and Matsu Valley. We're under the Cook Inlet Region's Tribal Authority. We take care of the primary care services as far as St. Paul, down the Aleutian Chain, the Kenai Peninsula, as far north as McGrath, the Iliamna Villages, and the Matsu Valley. So we have clinics in all areas, and we receive federal funds, state funds, and foundation funds. That's how our funding is allocated, and we also generate third-party revenue through Medicaid and Medicare and insurance. The Family Wellness Warriors Initiative is funded through South Central Foundation and many Foundation Rasmussen, Paul Allen, the Alaska Native Health Board, Department of Justice, and the South Central Foundation contributes about $885,000 each year and has been for the last 3 years. Anyway, I want to start by telling you a little bit of a story. I want to tell you that I'm a child of war. At the age of 5, at the tender age of 5, and if you could just imagine that, I don't know if you have children or grandchildren, I was witness to my father getting hit and blood splattering at my feet. I was witness to the horror of my mother being beaten by a stranger. I was also a child that was subject to abuse and neglect at 5 years old. And when I tried to tell my mother what was happening, she slapped me across the face and called me a wicked child. And there's a reason for why she did that. It was because she also was a child of the same thing, of domestic violence and child abuse and child neglect. And because of what happened to her, she became an alcoholic. And she died when I was 12 years old. So, by the grace of God, I am not an alcoholic, but it's only through after many years of counseling, after a long internal walk of spiritual and emotional growth, after watching many, many people live out this same war, after becoming a mother of six and a grandmother of 20, I've made a determination as an Alaska Native person. I'm about breaking the silence. I'm not going to sit back. I'm not going to wait. I'm not going to just let it happen to my children or my cousins or any of my relatives. And the beginning walk of this is to start by telling my story. And that's part of what Family Wellness Warriors Initiative is about. And I'm going to invite the next speaker to the table.
How do you follow that up? That's a pretty good story. I grew up in Old Harbor. Catherine's mom and my dad, brother and sister. And I grew up in a village that was a fantastic place to grow up. Tide was out, and the table was set, like they always say. And I grew up hunting and fishing and trapping in the village. My name's Don Shugak. My dad was Senefont, and my mom was Vera. And they grew up in a village called Eagle Harbor. If you were to fly over that today, you could see holes in the ground where the old barabaries were. I mean, the old mud houses. And then they moved to Old Harbor, where I was born. And I've got to make my story real short, but I could probably go on for quite a while. But during certain times of the year, the village would get real dark. It was a beautiful place when alcohol wasn't there. And when alcohol came in, it tore up the village. It tore up the family, the structure of the family. And there was a lot of abuse that took place. I remember when I was about 5 or 6 years old, we could hear kids. At 2 o'clock in the morning, no safe place for them, no place for them to be, to go where they could go. The whole village was tore up, and the families were suffered pretty much, and it wasn't any different in my house. In my house, my dad was very verbally abusive as well as physically abusive. And at times, there were times when I was the oldest of 10, and at one time, one of my sisters had to go to the hospital because of it, and he had no place to go. When he was growing up, he didn't have the information that we had today about what happened. When alcohol came in, it tore up the whole village structure as well as the family, and so the man kind of lost his place and because of that. And where I'm going with that is my dad was suffering with things that were a result of his abuse when he was growing up. And so when I came along, he abused his family like he was abused when he was growing up. When I was 5 or 6 years old, I was able to look around and see that this type of life that we were living, somehow God gave me the ability to see that, and that was that this is not normal living. And so I, all my life, I looked for some way that we could address the issues of the state that affected how we lived as young people. Catherine talked about being children of war, and that's exactly what we were, and because of the abuse. And so all my life I looked for something that would help to address those issues of abuse when we were younger. And Family Wellness Warriors came along, 3 years ago when I got involved with it. It started 8 years ago, but 3 years ago we really got involved in it. And Catherine came to me and said, you need to get involved in this. And she said, what is it? And I said, what is it? She says, it's abuse, neglect, and domestic violence. I said, yeah, right. I'm not going to get involved in something like that. And I thought it was just, and this is no reflection on women, but I thought it was a woman's thing. And then, you know, and that really, when you grow up in a village, it's just the way it is. And then she came a couple weeks later and she said, we're trying to call the men out. How are we going to do that? And she said, we want you to be the warriors again. And so that did something for me. It called me out as a man. It called me out as a person in my family to stand and protect them. And I had become abusive to my children when I was growing up, when they were growing up. And they suffer for that today. And they have a hard time studying in school because I call them stupid. I call them, very few times did I become physical with them. And it was just to reinforce that they were stupid because of how I grew up. And with this Family Wellness Warriors Initiative, it helped me to see that how I grew up when I was younger affected the way I live today. And my family suffered. My wife is here, Edna. And she came to me 2 years ago, and she said, you've got to choose between your anger and me and the kids. And I love my family. I love them very much. And I couldn't, for the life of me, think of how I could get along in this life without my family. And so I made a decision with the Lord's help to address the issues in my life and started to become a warrior for them. And that was a wake-up call for me to see that. And to see that what I was doing to my kids was the same thing my dad did to me. And I passed that on to my kids, and it affected the way I live today. And our villages are, and you know the statistics, are upwards of 80% have been abused in some way. And that's just a real small, I mean, every village in Alaska is that way. It's happening today. And the abuse is still going on. And so my involvement is to break the silence. Family Wellness 4 years ago started becoming pretty well known in the state, and I think we helped to popularize the thing in the news about breaking the silence of abuse in the state. And I really feel that this whole initiative, it's just not a program, it's a movement that's happening across the state, and we're seeing the positive results of it everywhere we hold conferences. But I'd like you to hear what it was doing to my family, my anger, before I got it taken care of, and my wife Edna is going to talk about it.
My name is Edna Shigek. I'm from a small village on Lake Iliamna. the smallest village, I guess, and was raised there. I met Don in Anchorage, and while we were both working there. I had asked the Lord for a husband because I figured by the time I was 29, I needed help. So I made a list of the things that I wanted in a husband, and he fit every one of them. There was one thing that I didn't know about Don, though. We were married in a very short time from the time of meeting. We were married within 3 months, I would say. I think I met him for the first time in October, and then he called me in November, and he wanted to get married on his birthday in December, which is the 9th. So things progressed pretty fast. And I didn't know him very well when we got married. We got married in February. I knew that he had a strain. My dad died when I was 5, so I never knew a father in the family or how a husband was. When we got married, we went right away into Bible school. We started in September of that year, and we would have these huge arguments, and because I was raised to be my mom was a very small woman, and my brother was very undersized also, that I was the biggest one in the family, and living in the village, you have to do a lot of physical labor, so I was the one that did most of it. And so when we were married, I didn't understand a husband's role, and I thought I was the boss, and he thought he was the boss, and we had big fights about this till I understood that actually he was supposed to be the boss. But his face would go black at times, and he would lose, like, understanding, it seemed. He didn't seem to hear me when I spoke to him. And then later, after I told him, asked him things about his loss of control, he would say he didn't remember. And we went on like this. We graduated from Bible school, and then we went home to Pedro Bay, and he was pastor there for 3 years, and then we decided to go to college, where he got a degree. And this whole time was like, I always had to keep the children quiet because he was either busy or he was tired or he was stressed or something, and he didn't want them to be noisy or to bother him. So that was mostly my job, was to keep them quiet and to not let them bother him. Then he became a school teacher, and another period of time when he couldn't stand to have them around, them to be noisy in the house. So then he started working up the slope on a two-week-on, two-week-off schedule. And we got used to that, him being gone out of the family home for 2 weeks at a time. And this is he became, it seemed, the older he got, it seemed he got angrier. And by now we had a daughter and a son. And I really wanted my children to grow up in a safe home. And it didn't seem to be safe. In fact, it seemed to be getting less and less safe in our home. Every time he came home, there was something wrong with them, something wrong with what they did. I didn't look right. It was just always something. There was, it was getting more and more uncomfortable in our house. Then we moved to Anchorage, and he was still working up the slope, and our son was going to school out there. Our daughter had graduated from high school, and I noticed that as Kyle got older, it seemed he got more and more withdrawn. And I always thought that when a man has a son, that he has one of the most incredible things that he could ask for in life, a boy that he can raise to be a man, and that he can learn how and teach his son how to do things. And what better way would there for a man to be than have a son that to follow in his footsteps? It seemed like Don didn't like Kyle, though. Kyle had a learning deficiency, or ADD, I guess it's called, and he would scream at Kyle that he was not making good grades in school, and he couldn't understand things. And being a teacher, I think it was really, he was kind of embarrassed of him because he wasn't doing well. And for me, I felt like I felt lonely a lot because of Don being a pastor. I was not allowed to speak to anyone in the village about his anger. When we went away to school, there was really no one to talk to. And then when we lived in Anchorage, there was really no one I could make friends with because I could not tell people of our split in our lives, so to speak. It wasn't that we were not together, but we were together, but I felt there was no intimacy. I couldn't trust him. Whenever I spoke to him, I didn't feel like he took the words and he would turn it against me. So I felt no intimacy with him. I felt no trust with him. I felt lonely, and there were nights when I just stayed awake all night asking God to change Don's heart, that this would be, I wanted to stay a family. I had asked God for this man, and then he was given to me, I felt, but then I could not live a life that where the children were getting more and more angry themselves. It seemed like they were really suffering for this, and there was no way that we could get together, it seemed, as a family. We couldn't enjoy each other. There always was lots of rules, and somebody was always doing something wrong. So I asked God to change Don's heart, and I decided that I would then tell Don that I felt, you know, there was times when I wanted to run away. I didn't want to stay there. I thought of what would I do with the kids, you know, and I loved Don. However, I couldn't handle that he was always angry about something. And it seemed as he got older, it seemed his response to every situation was to get angry about it. There was no happiness, there was no joy in it. So I felt like if I was going to save Kyle, we would have to leave. So I gave him the ultimatum. If he wanted to keep us around, he could, but it was his decision. And you know, now that Don doesn't have his anger anymore, our marriage is richer. We can talk about, I can bring up anything to him, whereas I couldn't before. We have sat our kids down and told them about the bad parts in our lives where we treated them badly, because as when Don would get angry, I would not just be nice about it. I would get angry right back, and so our household is very angry. And we asked them to tell us about times in their lives when they remember when we didn't treat them well, or there were things that where they felt less than human, so to speak. You know, they felt like they were worthless, and they did. They came out, and there was a lot of, we spent several hours just talking with them and telling, they told us incidents in their lives where they felt like they were really devalued, and there was a lot of tears, and our family is whole again. Our son is married now, and he comes up, and he is always anxious to, he seems to be, really want to be around his dad, which is something that, it gives me joy. If I hold my nose, I won't cry. I feel also a closer to Don, and I feel like we're part of a team. We go all around in meetings, and we tell our stories like this. And there are more than, I cannot tell you the amount of people that come up and they tell me, that's my story. When we talk like on the radio, do a radio station, people call from all parts of the nation and say, "That's us. What do I do?" You know, and all we can do is tell them that it's an anger problem and it has to be taken care of before it really wrecks their family. So I appreciate you hearing us.
Thank you.
My name is Steve Willis. I presently live in Wasilla. It's not easy for me to sit here and talk to a group like this because some of the very things that the Family Wellness Warriors Initiative is about, ending abuse, applied to me directly because I was an abuser. I grew up in the state in a seemingly ideal situation, son of a missionary family, initially in Non-Dalton, and then on down into Bristol Bay, where I grew up in Igigik. It was before Molly Hooch, and at the age of 13, I left home for high school. I attended five different high schools in 4 years, way early in my life. 6 years old, I was first introduced to sexual abuse by peers. And I had nowhere to turn because in my seemingly idyllic home, there was an abusive atmosphere. I was afraid. The punishment was severe, and there was no way that I could come clean with it. I know that early on my mother suspected something, but I knew what would happen if I owned up to what was going on, and out of fear, I kept it quiet. So I began living two lives. I lived one life that I would present to people, and another life that would be the real me. Started way early, and continued throughout my grade school years and into high school. One side of me was a church boy and doing things that I ought to do. The other side of me was drinking, carousing, smoking, doing whatever I wanted to do. I'm not proud of it at all. At the very young age of 18, I married for the first time, and after 11 years of marriage and two children, that marriage broke up. And I was approaching the age of 30. I was single for a couple years and came back to Non-Dalton, where I met Jeannie. She was my princess. She was my bride. I had to have her, and she agreed to marry me. I never, ever wanted to hurt her, ever. But we allowed alcohol into our life. And alcohol set the stage for lowered inhibitions, bouts and fits of anger. We were talking about this trip last night, and a memory surfaced from about 1991 when we were invited down to Juneau to testify for another situation, and she got to come with me, and we came down, and it was just an idyllic trip, all expenses paid. And while here, we started partying, and it turned into a very ugly scene. It was right around that time that I crossed the line, and I actually struck my wife. So Jeannie shrank from me. She was afraid of me. She couldn't be her. I wanted her to be the way I wanted her to be, and I insisted on it. So we raised children. We've had three children. We have three children. And my anger would be directed at their mother, and they could see that, although I thought we kept it fairly well camouflaged. Not so. Long about the time that our oldest daughter was 15, 16, she began to talk about leaving home. She couldn't wait to be old enough to leave, and something was wrong. We changed directions in our life. We moved out of the little village. We moved into a larger town. We began attending church and started cutting back on the alcohol. And it was through continued attendance at church that we were able to eradicate alcohol from our life. But the damage that was there was still done. And you can't eradicate that kind of damage without dealing with it. About 2 years ago, I was invited to a Family Wellness Warriors conference, and on the application form, there were categories to fill out, and I didn't feel that any of them applied to me because I'd never been abused. And I refused to fill them out, and we were still invited to go to it. And in that format, I discovered a lot of the things that caused what later developed into an abusive lifestyle. And I was able to face them, and Jeannie was as well. And my relationship with our son, who's a teenager, began to grow more and more strained, and I could see a pattern developing. He wanted to be out of the house as well. It was breaking my heart because there was nothing I could do to stop it. And I noticed something about him that really amazed me. He's a very tough young man, very idealistic and very honest. And he would stand up to me, stand up against me, almost get in my face. He'd stay in my space. And it amazed me that he would do that. And I asked him finally, after having attended this conference, I said, "What is it, son? I want to give you the opportunity to speak your mind. I want to know what happened. What is it about you?" I said, "I think it's something that you've experienced in your past that's caused this." My 17-year-old son stood there and looked at me, and tears started pouring down his face. And I sat there on pins and needles because I had no idea what he was going to say. It never dawned on me what he might say, and I couldn't imagine. And he finally blurted out, he said, "You beat my mama. She couldn't stand up against you, but I have to." All I could do was thank him for his honesty and thank the program, the Family Wellness Warriors Initiative, to making me aware and cognizant of what was going on and giving me the strength and the motive to allow my son his freedom and his voice and stop this pattern of abuse now. It's not easy to tell the story, but I don't want to spare myself because I want it to stop. Thank you.
My name is Jeannie Willis. I grew up in a village called Nundalton. It's on Lake Clark, about 250 people. I grew up with 12 siblings, and as a child, I had seen a lot of things that I shouldn't have. I watched as my parents got drunk and my dad hit my mom. I watched as my brothers got drunk and fought in the house with all of us little kids, screaming and crying and telling them to stop. Watched as my little friends were running from their house to their neighbor's house because their mom and dad was fighting, or their brothers and fathers were fighting. Most of these times were because of alcohol. And they have never faced that issue. The experience of taking care of my mom's bloody nose, or trying to get her to bed so we can get up for school the next morning, was very embarrassing to me. Cleaning up broken dishes and furniture made me very angry. And listening to people gossip, thinking that I wasn't listening, was very humiliating. This is where I started putting up walls around me so I didn't have to deal with that part of my life. I pretended it never happened. Got married when I was 21 years old. The first couple of years were really good years, and our first child was born. Then my husband and I started drinking alcohol, which was more and more as time went on. And our marriage started heading downhill from there. My husband was unfaithful and physically, emotionally, and verbally abusive. His rage was so bad that I feared for my well-being. I developed a pattern of hiding in my house because of black eyes, hiding things that our children did wrong because the punishment would be too much, hiding the fact that I was unhappy, hiding financial mistakes because if my husband found out, he would turn into a raging maniac. This is the way I lived. My husband would not hurt our kids intentionally, but the emotional abuse was done without him even knowing it. I wouldn't hurt my kids intentionally either, but when I got to the point of giving up all of my dreams, I stole their dreams too. I didn't want to do anything. I didn't want to go anywhere. I didn't want anything. It affected my kids' lives to the point where they quit dreaming. They didn't want anything, and if they did, they wouldn't ask for it because they figured they won't get it. I put them down for wanting too much. We lived like that for many years, a few years. Then in 1996, we moved from the village and finally decided that we need to clean up our lives. We cut down on the alcohol and started facing certain issues in our lives. And then in January 2004, we went to a conference. It was put on by Family Wellness Warriors Initiative. And that was a great turning point in my life. It showed me, through faith and a better understanding of what I went through as a kid and then as an adult, to what I am today. Looking at past damage is very necessary to figure out why you are who you are today. My husband and I gave up that past life and are on our journey to healing. We give a lot of credit to Family Wellness Warriors Initiative because of the conference we went to. It helped us think about things from our past and to start working through it. I would like to say I can't help thinking about all the people who are going through a life similar to ours. Can't help thinking about all the people in Alaska who have been through past damage and don't realize how it is affecting them today. What are they passing on generation after generation? I thank Family Wellness Warriors Initiative for stepping in and taking charge, for letting us see a bright spot in our future and our kids' future. Thank you.
I said earlier that I'm the CEO of South Central Foundation. It's Alaska Native American Indian primary care organization, and we run adolescent, youth, and residential treatment programs. We also run an adult Dena Khoi facility, which the state fund. Thank you very much. Both of those have 100% issues with domestic violence, child abuse, and neglect. Every single resident that has come through. Behavioral health, we run a huge behavioral health facility, which we have provide services to over 40,000 Alaska Natives. 70 to 75% of them report domestic violence, child abuse, and neglect in their background. It isn't about alcohol only. It's about why we medicate. We medicate with alcohol to bury those things that are within us around domestic violence, child abuse, neglect. Family Wellness Warriors Initiative is not just another program, it's a movement. We are taking hold of child sexual abuse, child neglect, and domestic violence, and we're breaking the silence. It's an Alaska Native-led initiative, and we're about changing our belief systems that encourage domestic violence, abuse, and neglect as socially acceptable and tolerable. This movement has been endorsed by Alaska Native communities, councils, statewide governing bodies through resolutions. Family Wellness Warriors Initiative is in the door of the village. We're in the door of the churches that are in the village. We're in the door of the individual, and we're in the door of the families and the community. And Family Wellness Warriors Initiative provides a means for full discussion of all the issues around domestic violence, child abuse, and neglect. Family Wellness Warriors Initiative is creating a safe umbrella of village community adults. And Family Wellness Warriors Initiative is training Alaskans to be competent and skilled, equipped to respond to prevent child abuse, child neglect, and child abuse and domestic violence. Child abuse and child neglect and domestic violence is not about minorities. It's not about the low income. It's not about Alaska Natives. It's about people being harmed and those who have harmed. I went to a Surgeon General's workshop, and I'll leave a copy of this with you. The Surgeon General's workshop was around making prevention of child maltreatment a national priority, and he was there for 2 days. He listened to about 100 of us across the nation by invitation around the issues of domestic violence, child abuse, neglect, and child maltreatment. And when I got up to speak, I told him a little bit of my story and the people that were there, and said, if he wants to make a child maltreatment a national priority, and if this body of professionals wants to make child maltreatment a national priority, then I would encourage professionals and people around to talk about how they've been harmed and the harm that has been done to them, and even the harm that they have done. Because it's not just about low-income minority or Alaska Natives. And the Surgeon General got up, and in his closing remarks, he made me cry, because he told his story. It was very powerful. So that's what Family Wellness Warriors Initiative is about. And I appreciate you hearing us today.
Thank you very much. Yeah. It really touches me, and it makes me realize that you truly are warriors, all of you. You truly are. You have a lot of courage, and I thank you for that. A weak person couldn't do what you're doing. So you are very strong. So inside, through this awe, you have become strong because of it. Thank you. I think it'll help a lot of people across the state. Does anybody have any comments?
Thank you. Also, I've been a guardian ad litem and worked with a lot of the families that are affected, and affected in my own household, in fact, my own family as well. But one of the things that always troubled me the most is rural or village kids who are in state custody in Anchorage. And sometimes they're transferred there for treatment, but a lot of times it's because their families bring them into the city for other reasons, and they come to the attention of somebody and come into custody, and I always worry about kids from a very small place who not only are yanked away from their families, but they're also in culture shock going to a school of 400 kids where they're in a household where none of the foods or anything that they're used to, and everything is different. And I don't know any, I mean, it's a short-term fix maybe for that child, balanced by a lot of harm that's also being done. And I don't know any, if you have suggestions about those kind of cases, I mean, what to do with these kids.
In what we're doing, many people have come to us and said, what are you going to do about the kids? And currently, we have some of the nonprofits involved in family welfare work that are working in the world that you're talking about, specifically with children who who are under state custody, yes. In our side of the world with South Central, we're not specifically involved in that world. But when you talk about Family Wellness Warriors Initiative, we're targeting the adults to become a safe environment, but also the environment to become a safe environment. Uh-huh. So it's a partnership connecting with people who are dealing with the children that are involved in this picture. And how is that environment safe or not safe? So our work is getting along the sister nonprofits that are working in this area and partnering up with them to make sure that their environment is safe, that they have what it takes to receive these children. And what I'm hearing is not there yet, right, from you. It's absolutely not there. I don't have an answer.
Let me know when you do.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I would like to say, though, in that work, I also learned, as each of you know, that people really can and do change, and sometimes in very surprising, very unexpected ways. And I mean, it's really common to have kids raised by the grandparents who had those same problems than their kids do, but the grandparents have got their act together and they're competent at raising children now the second time around. And
that's what we're doing. We're trying to create a safe umbrella of adults to receive those children. Uh-huh. And people say, come and talk with the children. We're saying, wait, the environment's not safe to be talking to the children. Not yet. Not the legal system, not the judicial system, not the healthcare system. Nothing is ready to be talking to the children yet. We were the children. And we know that if we went in and talked with the children, that umbrella is not ready for that. What would happen?
What could have made it different for you?
A safe environment?
Uh-huh.
A family like this, who's ready to break the silence, change their lives, and take control of their community.
Representative Sisson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you so much. It's an honor for you to trust us. And listening to you, it also makes me believe that for change to truly happen, it has to be people working with people on a peer level. You can't talk down, and that's one of the real problems. Is it's hard to make programs and pay people to come in, and then really give. You know what I mean? That's one of the real problems. And your program is people helping people, is what it sounds like. It's not, it really is working right where it has to work. It can't work any other way, I don't think. So that's a real rough one, but it's where we have to go.
I'm glad you said that. We held a conference of 150 people in Fairbanks. 32 Alaskans, not just Alaska Natives, that we had trained, came and volunteered 10 days of their life to be at a conference to do this kind of work from 7:30 in the morning till sometimes 11:30 at night for 10 days. And so it's lay people coming in, volunteering their time. And that's not talking about the training before they got there. No. It is.
Representative Corrin.
Before we go, because we only have 4 minutes, I want to make sure I got some thoughts in as well, and I thank you for your testimony. I just want to remind you and other listeners that women can be perpetrators of violence as well, too. And the impression that I'm getting in reading your information and hearing your testimony, as compelling as it is and as real as it is, in some ways suggests that there's far more incidences of men, and perhaps there are if you look at statistics, but the fact is also that it can go the other way, and women can be perpetrators, women can be abusers. I've seen it happen in the Mat-Su. I've had people bring issues to me, and it almost seems like our society is moving in the direction of portraying the man as the bad person in the household, and I want to make sure that we don't go in that direction. Okay?
Yep. And I hear you. What I think that if you heard in our conference, it's both the men and the women. both the men and the women are telling their story of harm, of people who've harmed. It isn't just a man's story of a man harming. It's women, too. I agree with you. Absolutely.
Our media seems to often portray it as the man's the bad guy. There's a television station on cable, I forget which one it is, but it's geared exclusively toward running stories about how bad man is in society and how he's always beaten up on the women and always the terrible human being on this planet. And it really bothers me to read to look at that station. And I just want to make sure that we're careful to recognize that violence cuts both ways.
Oh, absolutely. We totally agree with you. The Family Wellness Warriors Initiative is calling out the warrior and the man. And it's because we're going back to a way of saying, you're it for us. Come and protect us. Mm-hmm. Just protect us like you did always before. We're asking you to be the front line, the quarterbacks, whatever it is that men are. And we have been calling out the warriors, and they have been rising. Mm-hmm. It's a big deal.
Thank you very much.
Catherine and Don and Edna and Steve and Jenny, thank you so much, because I know I can't imagine, it wouldn't be easy for me to come and do what you've done. And so I appreciate it. And Catherine, do you want to, quick before the very end, tell a little bit about what you're willing to do across the state for other people now?
What we are doing is we are providing training. We have a website that you could call in, 1-800-478-3343. If anyone's interested in doing to being involved with Family Wellness Warriors Initiative and to learn more about it, we also have some posters here for you today as gifts and some more information.
Okay, what was that number again, 1-800?
1-800-478-3343. We also have a website, www.southcentralfoundation.com, and you can link to the Family Wellness Warriors Initiative.
Okay. And is there anything, I mean, I know that you get some funding from the state. Are there any other ways that we can help as a state? And I guess I'm saying not so much money, but are there other ways that we can help?
If the state would endorse Family Wellness Warriors Initiative as one of the movements that are happening across the state that is addressing domestic violence, child abuse, and neglect in a good way for those that have harmed and those who have been harmed, that would be a great, great assistance for us.
Okay, and so that like the Department of Social Services or?
Yes, and the Department of Health and Human Services and the Department of Corrections.
Okay, and have any of those specific people been in on some of this?
The Department of Corrections, we are partnering with their faith-based pod and have, we have met with them and are working with them with Family Wellness Warriors Initiative. Yes.
We'll see what we can do.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we will adjourn this meeting.